Chapter 1. Duvenwog. The afternoon sun was high in the cloudless sky and overly bright within the hidden clearing. Surrounded by dense forest, the secluded grass-covered retreat provided the ideal privacy they sought. Angarahin sat cross-legged on the soft green grass. A dull sword lay across his lap, with his hands resting on the blade instead of the hilt. He only lowered his guard when with her. Hidden in their secret training arena, his worries disappeared, a way he hadn't felt since early childhood. This wasn't easy for him. Squinting with his sensitive blue eyes into the unforgiving brightness, he watched her closely. His gaze never wavered as she lunged and parried, thrusting her sword at the imaginary enemy. Her long, raven-black hair, usually in a braided ponytail, was unkempt today and covered her face. Princess Arwen Feslon of Duvenwog, daughter of King Egger and Queen Eir, his best friend, brought her sword over and around her head, spun and decapitated the non-existing enemy. Angarahin grabbed a rock from the small pile he gathered earlier and threw it while her back was to him. It sailed towards her head, right where he had aimed. With a quick downward swing, she spun around and knocked the rock to the ground. A puff of dirt sprung from where it landed. He jumped to his feet, allowing his sword to fall from his lap, and clapped. Arwen stopped, brushed her hair behind one pointed ear, and raised her arms, basking in the glory of his applause. A sparkle of pride and deep accomplishment shone in her emerald green eyes, a full smile gracing her lips.
"I did it! I finally did it, after all this time!"
She ran towards him and threw her arms around his back, then buried her head against his chest in an unexpected hug. He stood there, frozen, yet she let go before he could reciprocate.
"Fantastic!"
he said, unable to regain his disciplined composure, allowing himself a partial smile.
"Perhaps there was more incentive this time."
"How so?" she raised an eyebrow. "I aimed at your head," he said almost in a whisper.
"Angarahin, you did not."
"I did," he shrugged his shoulders and winked. "And it seems to have worked rather well."
"You'll pay for that, Angarahin, love Deanna."
She raised her sword in a guarded position and put distance between them.
"Let's dance, if you're not too afraid."
With a full smile, Angarahin picked up his sword and charged towards her. She blocked his overhead swing and the upward return strike, then parried from the left and twice from the right. Each time she deflected his blows, yet he continued the barrage, slashing and swinging, backing her up to the tree line. One-handed, he spun around and swung his sword in a large arc, striking her hard on the thigh. She let out a slight grunt, but didn't falter. She missed several more blocks in quick succession, one to her shoulder, one to her thigh, and a resounding blow to her ribs. Each strike was faster and more forceful than the last. She tripped over an exposed root, causing her sword to swing wide to the right. Angarahin saw the opening, and with an overhead swing, they contacted, sword against sword, edge on edge, and without resistance, he buried her dull blade into a tree. Bits of bark exploded around them. Arwen dropped one knee, put a fist on the ground, and lowered her head, her breathing shallow and fast. He knelt beside her and rubbed her quivering shoulders.
"Why did I push her so hard?"
he thought, sweat glistening on her forehead and dripped from her small elven nose with each labored breath. Her bright green eyes, now dim and tired, as she considered him through matted hair, which was now scattered across her face.
"I'm sorry,"
Angarahin said as he brushed her hair aside.
"You're too fast. I couldn't keep up,"
Arwen said after her breathing slowed.
"Nonsense. I thought you did great."
Guilt tugged at his heart for pushing her so hard.
"You're definitely improving."
She stared into his eyes with gratitude.
"Thank you,"
she said, then took a long, deep breath.
"I couldn't even see your sword at the end. It was all just a blur."
"Don't worry. In time, you will." He grabbed her sword by the hilt, braced his left foot against the tree, and removed it, then offered her his free hand to help her stand. "But that's enough for today. Agreed?"
"No argument from me. I don't think the trees can handle any more abuse."
She pulled herself upright, then tilted her head towards the deep gash in the tree and smiled with a glimmer of something more in her eyes.
"Thank you for the sparring practice. The time we spend together means a lot to me. I'll find you this evening."
Her hand momentarily lingered on his shoulder. Then she disappeared into the forest. Every few days for the past year, he arrived in their private clearing before her and left after she'd gone. When she first asked for training, she stressed how important keeping secret their private sessions were to her, so he obliged. He never questioned her reason for secrecy. When enough time passed and it wouldn't appear they were together, he gathered their swords, then entered the dense forest. Shadows covered the narrow trail, illuminated by the few beams of sunlight that permeated the canopy. Thick underbrush lined the worn dirt walkway, waiting to ensnare any wayward step. With a sharp turn to the right, he began walking down a gentle slope. The trees began to thin, revealing the bright afternoon sun. The hill overlooked the northern road out of Duvenwag. Ahead lay the place he called home for the past 11 years. Rising above the surrounding trees, the castle's six gray towers, long bereft of defensive armaments, had lightened from the constant beating of the sun. From here, the entrance to the great hall, where King Fezlon spent his days, was visible. The dark brown wood and greenstone arched roof sat in stark contrast with the rest of the dull gray. A low rumble from behind caught his attention. He stopped in mid-stride. Two horses with mounted soldiers trotted towards him on the road. They pulled a covered carriage with a black and purple banner in the corner. A dragon filled the center.
"The sigil of Kuvayan? What's this about?" he wondered.
Dust billowed from behind the delegation as they continued towards the great hall. As the carriage arrived, two figures emerged, but from a distance, he was unable to see who they were. He shook his head and renewed his walk downhill until the ground flattened at the edge of the tree line. A Kuvayan delegation's arrival didn't concern him. Political matters of the kingdom weren't his specialty. If he wanted to know, he'd ask Ariwin this evening. In front of him stood the moss-covered stone fortifications. An archway with raised metal lattice extended across the road. No guards stood at the gate, for King Fezlon decreed, "In times of peace, the presence of men-at-arms discouraged free travel and commerce amongst the kingdoms." After this past year, Angarahin was thankful for the policy. It allowed him and Ariwin to sneak away to their secret clearing without detection. Once on the castle grounds, he walked towards the obscure iron-bound door nestled at the base of the closest tower. Inside, candles lined the walls. Their dancing flames cast yellow light throughout the open space. Two benches, flanked by vacant armor stands, sat in the center of the room. Behind him, a darker passageway led to where the sharpened weapons were stored. He stepped forward, placing the two practice blades pointing down on the rack to the left of the doorway, and exited the armory. As he entered Duvenwag's market, the overwhelming smell of enchanted forest incense, his favorite scent, struck his nose. He twisted and turned through the throngs of people to avoid collision, eyes darting from person to person. His distrust caused him to reflexively reach for the dagger he no longer carried on his hip. Around 6 months ago, Ariwen asked why he felt the need to carry his blade within the city walls, and without a valid excuse, he agreed to leave it behind. All the same, he still felt naked without it. The shop he sought stood on the last corner before the docks. Ah, the docks. Close by was the small private alcove where he and Ariwin snuck away to his mischievous children. A time where he got to experience the innocence of childhood, even though it had been stolen from him years before. The powerful memory brought him joy. We should go back there sometime. Years of abuse from salty air had warped the shop's pale wooden frame. Adorning the walls were a variety of silver and gold necklaces, interlaced with rubies, while others held blue gems. He drew close to a balding older man with wisps of white hair hunched over the counter, tracing lines of a book he read with his finger. The man raised his head.
"Greetings, Ingarahin."
The man closed the book and pulled out a small purse from below the countertop. "Hello, Nern. Are those the emeralds?"
"Yes, they are,"
Nern said, opening the bag and pouring a dozen small emeralds onto the counter. And Garahin lifted one and turned it over in his fingers.
"Exactly what I needed. How much do I owe you?"
"You've already paid," Nern said.
And Garahin furrowed his eyebrows.
"I don't think I have."
"You helped my daughter when no one else would, and I told you I would repay your kindness."
Nern returned the emeralds to the bag.
"I tossed out a few belligerent drunks that were harassing her. Any decent man would have done the same,"
Ingarahin said.
"I like your modesty, Ingarahin, but no one else was willing to stand up to those men."
Nern handed him the emeralds.
"These are yours."
"Thank you," Ingarahin said graciously.
A young woman with bright orange hair entered the shop and began perusing the necklaces.
"How may I help you, miss?"
Nern said, exiting from behind the counter. While Nern's back was turned, Ingarahin placed 5 gold pieces on the counter and strode out of the shop. Before the door closed, he heard Nern jokingly shout,
"You're not that sneaky!"
And Garahin smiled to himself and left the market. From the side entrance of the castle, the furthest point from the great hall, a stairway led to the bedchambers on the upper level. From the stairwell, he was able to avoid most of the castle's staff. He entered a long hallway, and to his right was a double door leading to a pantry. The spiral staircase at the end was narrow, too small to walk side by side. Thin slits, just large enough for an archer to shoot through, adorned the outer wall and allowed in enough light, negating the need of a torch. He passed Ariwin's green bedroom door, which he gave a quick glance, yet did not approach. Instead, he proceeded to his room.
"She won't be in there now, not with the visitors from Kuvayan here," he thought.
In his room, dark gray curtains blocked out the brightness of the sun. A small table with 2 cloth-covered chairs sat beside his bed. He tossed the clothes into a corner and picked up a mysterious small folded piece of parchment from the table. Written on it were 2 words, "It's started." Full bookshelves lined the walls of Ariwin's father's study. A large dark brown desk occupied the center of the room. Her father sat fixated on the parchment in front of him, 2 unlit candles flanking either side. Dwindling sunlight filtered through the stained glass windows, casting the room in a reddish hue. Ariwin stood in the open doorway wearing a loose-fitting green dress. Her hair in a tight ponytail and the smell of rose perfume emanated from her. A few splashes, graciously gifted from her mother, was all that hid the stench of the day's training. It was all she could do with the notice she was given. She wasn't in her room but 5 minutes when Loreg, her older brother, banged on the door, saying their father required her presence in the throne room. A visitor from Kuvayan had arrived. When she entered the throne room, she found King Shuz Muin, the king of Kuvayan, standing in front of her father. Unlike previous times King Muin had come to Duvenwag, today's meeting seemed of greater importance and was held with more formality, although there was still a friendly air to their discussions. The first word she heard was unification. After listening to King Muin's speech, she stayed in the throne room until called upon.
"You wish to see me, father?"
He looked up from the desk.
"Come in, have a seat."
The chair's wooden slats dug into the growing knot on her thigh.
"What is your opinion of King Muin's proposal?"
Wouldn't Lorag be more suited to gauge his sincerity? I do not doubt his sincerity, but wish to hear your thoughts on the matter. She stayed silent for a moment. I think unification is a worthwhile pursuit. However, I don't know enough about the other kingdoms to guess their reaction. But why ask my thoughts? You've already agreed to the discussions. She shifted her weight due to the discomfort growing in her leg. I want you to accompany me to Kuvayan to meet the other kings to observe. Her father was silent for a minute, looking pensive while his fingers drummed on the table.
Something more?
Arwen asked, interrupting his thoughts and bringing her father's attention back to the moment. So you can see what awaits you when you become queen, should discussions fail.
What of Lorig? He is next in line.
Your brother has no desire for the throne. He made that clear, and his talents lie elsewhere. You have taken more of an interest in the workings of the kingdom, and don't think the way the citizens revere you has gone unnoticed. Do not worry, this is all in preparation for the future. Your mother and I have no intention of stepping down any time soon. Heavy footsteps sounded behind her, and she turned. A lanky man, 5 years older than her, with short brown hair, wearing an abundance of flashy gold jewelry, stomped into the room. Lord Clivage Gew, the richest man in Duvenwog, never missed an opportunity to flaunt his wealth. Arwen rolled her eyes.
Did you not think it prudent to inform your lords a delegation representing Kuvayan arrived?
He asked, almost whining. If I thought your attendance was necessary, I would have summoned you. Now remove yourself before further embarrassment. Clivage backed away as Arwen stared directly into his eyes, while he slowly closed the door. Her satisfied smile was hard to suppress. You will unfortunately have to handle people like him as well, her father said while rubbing his temples. Discussions continued late into the night. When they concluded, Arwen returned warily to her bedroom. Outside her door, she gazed down the hallway. No light shone from under Angarahin's door.
Not tonight, she thought with a sigh, and entered her room.
Faint moonlight illuminated her chambers, enough so as not to trip over anything. Her bed rested against the back wall. 4 posts held sheer curtains, providing a refuge from insects on summer nights. Beside the bed, a doorway opened to a small private balcony where she sat on cool evenings. She changed into a gray nightgown, climbed into bed, and stared at the ceiling until she fell asleep. The early morning sun warmed her face, waking her. The wooden floor was cold beneath her feet.
Where are my slippers?
She wondered, looking underneath her bed. Nothing. A burst of pain shot from her leg to her toe as it brushed the bed frame.
That's ugly,
she said, gently poking the tender bruise.
I'll find them later.
It was early enough that most everyone was still asleep. Peering into the hallway, she found it vacant. She faintly knocked on Angirhin's door.
Enter!
His muffled voice came from the other side. He stood at the far end of his room, fully dressed in ragged gray clothing. His black hair hung loose over his shoulders. A scabbard and sword lay on the table.
Good morning, Arwen, he said, turning around.
Dark circles were under his eyes, as if he hadn't slept.
Everything okay?
Yes, I couldn't sleep is all,
he grumbled, confirming her suspicions.
Miss me?
Arwen said with a playful smile in an attempt to lighten the mood.
I tried to get free.
I know, I enjoy our dinners together, but I knew you could get caught up with the Kuvayan visitors when I saw them arrive.
I'll tell you all about it over breakfast.
She moved closer to him, pulling her nightgown to the middle of her thigh, uncovering a large black, blue, and purple bruise.
But look what you did.
Any higher and you'll show me everything, Angarahin said, then widened his eyes after a second. I don't think he meant to say that aloud, Arwen thought with mild surprise. She lifted her gown slightly higher, then laughed and dropped it.
And don't get any ideas, she chuckled.
Sorry, he shook his head. It looks painful. I got carried away.
A little. No need to apologize. It's part of learning.
She looked up at him. Something wasn't right. His mind seemed distant.
Are you sure you're okay?
Angarahine's lightning blue eyes glistened as he looked down at her.
Are those tears?
Arwen thought.
I have to go now. I'll be back in a day or two.
He painfully tore his gaze away, picked up his sword, and left her alone in his room. By the time she reached the hallway, he was nowhere in sight. More sunlight poured in through the windows. Everyone would wake soon, and standing in Angarahine's room, wearing nothing but a nightgown, was not how she wanted anyone to see her. She closed his door and hurried back to her room, where she grabbed a brown and green dress before she proceeded to the bathing chambers. Later in the day, clouds moved in from the sea, bringing with them a cool, gentle breeze. After breakfast, Arwen sat on her balcony, reading a brief history of Kuvayan that she had found in the castle's great library. The balcony and bedroom doors remained open, allowing a cool breeze to flow through.
"Are you busy, Ari?"
Loraig asked, poking his head through the bedroom door. She placed a piece of cloth between the pages and closed the book.
"I'm rather busy, but for you, I can spare a minute," she said, suppressing a laugh.
Loraig closed her bedroom door, crossed her room, and joined Arwen on the balcony.
"What's this about having no desire for the throne? Father told me yesterday."
Loraig lowered himself and sat cross-legged.
"It's true, Ari. I never wanted to be king. Even as children, I knew you would make a better leader. I have but one request when you're queen."
A mischievous grin spread across his face.
"A fully stocked wine cellar?"
Arwen said jokingly. He rubbed his chin.
"Two requests. The wine and to be your primary advisor."
"I think I can arrange both. What was it you wished to talk about?"
Arwen asked.
"I'll hold you to that. Have you seen Angarahine? I can't find him anywhere."
"He left early this morning."
Loraig raised his eyebrow questioningly.
"He seemed preoccupied and in a hurry. Said he had to leave and then just left. It made me worry,"
she said, flustered.
"No need to worry. Wherever he went, I know he can take care of himself. But he didn't say anything about where he was going?"
"No, just that he would be gone for a day or two. And I saw tears in his eyes, Loraig. I really am worried. It's not like him."
"Maybe he needs space to clear his head. It's not the first time he's disappeared for a few days. If you want, I can find him."
"You do that?"
Loraig nodded. She gazed over the edge of the balcony. More clouds filled the sky, but it didn't appear they'd bring rain.
"No, I'll respect his privacy," Arwen said reluctantly.
Loraig patted her knee.
"Think happy thoughts. We're having dinner with King Muin tonight."
"Those are stressful thoughts," she laughed nervously.
"One other thing," Loraig said, looking at her thigh. "Try to avoid walking into sharp edges. It hurts." He winked.
An abandoned shack lay hidden among the trees a mile from the road. Vines snaked across its withered, blackened wood. Shattered glass shards shimmering in his torchlight and clung to the windowsill. Angarahine was early. The door creaked open loud enough to raise the dead. If anyone was close, they'd know he was there. Pale moonlight glimmered off cobwebbed corners. A broken staircase missing half the steps led to the remnants of the second level. The dark sky peered through massive holes in the second floor and roof. "Up there will do," Angarahine considered. Although creaky, the staircase was still solid, so he climbed. From his darkened vantage point, he could watch everything on the first floor while remaining hidden. He extinguished his torch and set it down next to him. A few feet from him was a large exposed beam, and the smell of rotting wood emanated from around him. The underbrush rustled, and he grabbed the hilt of his sword. There was no further movement, so he released his grip on the hilt. All he could do was wait. This morning, Arwen saw straight through his facade. The moment their eyes met, all his defenses crumbled.
And that comment? What a stupid thing to say aloud. The look in her eyes and tears? What's wrong with me? Why couldn't I look away?
And Garaheen scolded himself. He fought the urge to throw something. Suddenly, a creature's howl ripped his focus back to the present. Predators on the hunt, and Garaheen thought indifferently. Dark clouds from the south lengthened the shadows, and wind whispered through the treetops. It wouldn't be ideal if a storm broke while he waited. Hopefully it holds, and Garaheen wished. Once he finished dealing with his contact, he planned to sleep in a nearby abandoned tower, and arriving dry was preferable. Through the missing wall on his left, a bobbing light appeared in the trees. It hung for a second before proceeding to the open door. A short, cloaked figure entered and set the lantern on the dirt floor. And Garaheen studied his surroundings, confirming they were alone. The figure lowered his hood, revealing a middle-aged man with shaggy blonde hair who stared unerringly at the spot where Angarahin had just been.
I know you're watching me. Nobody followed. I made sure of it,
the man said, his voice mid-range and nasally. He spun around with his arms raised. Angarahin hung from an exposed beam, then landed with a soft thud.
Care to explain your message? Angarahin asked bluntly.
The embers of discontent settle on the underpinnings of desire. It takes but a gentle wind to bloom an inferno,
the man said cryptically. Angarahin brushed his fingers through his hair. After all these years, the opportunity had at last presented itself. He'd finally have his revenge.
And Jorgum?
Angarahin asked.
No change.
Very well, then. 10 gold.
Angarahin removed the coin purse from inside his pants.
30,
the man said smugly.
We agreed on 10,
Angarahin said, with anger creeping into his voice.
That was before I discovered your true identity and the price on your head. But no one appears to be aware of it.
The man paused.
Yet!
An unspoken threat hung over the last word. Rage boiled Angarahin's blood, and in less than the blink of an eye, his sword was at the man's throat. His eyes darted around the room.
You would sell me out for a forgotten reward?
Fury was behind Angarahin's every word.
On the contrary, I would merely hang it above your head like an executioner's axe. You remember that feeling, don't you?
Angarahin pushed the blade harder, drawing blood. The man slowly raised his empty hands, deliberate but not fearful.
I carry no weapon. I deal in information, not violence and death. You wouldn't cut down a defenseless man, would you?
The taunting infuriated him. A flick of his wrist and the man's head would tumble to the ground. But that's just not who he was.
10 gold, 13 silver, all I have. Take it and leave before I change my mind. For the least I'll do to you is cut out your tongue.
The man snatched the coins, picked up the lantern, and ran from the shack, laughing deviously. Angarahin stood in the center of the room, disquieted.
Is there still a price on my head? I shouldn't have let him live, but if I killed him, I'd be no better than Garahim.
His rage spilled forth, and he threw his sword at the door, where it sliced through the rotten wood with ease, wobbling back and forth. Annoyed by the outburst, he shook his head, retrieved his sword, and left the shack. There was no clear path to the tower or markings to its location. The moonlight dwindled as more clouds covered the sky. In his anger, he left his torch on the second level of the shack. Suddenly, something rough crashed into his right eye. He dropped to his knees. Above him, a low-hanging branch jutted from a tree trunk.
How did I miss that?
He cursed inwardly. An intense pressure pressed outwards on his head as his eyes swelled.
As if I didn't have enough trouble seen already, he thought.
The moss-covered stone tower rose from overgrown grass in what once was a clearing. Its door, long fallen, lay splintered in the entryway. As he ascended the tower, a loud shriek blared by his ear. Directly beside him, a bird's nest was cradled in an arrow slit. Old furniture was piled, blocking the third-level staircase, preventing him from climbing further. Annoyed, he turned and sat against the cold stone wall as his eye throbbed.
Another sleepless night, he thought, scowling.
At dawn's first light, he woke.
Was that even an hour?
Angarahim thought. The swelling in his right eye had lowered, but he still couldn't open it. He left the tower and walked 2 hours on a diagonal course to a worn road skirting Guvarnid, a decrepit place under the governance of the pathetic Lord Clivage Gew. Years of travel by horses, wagons, and people trampled all remnants of grass, leaving nothing except for the packed dirt and occasional rock. A sporadic smattering of buildings broke the monotony of the forest and rolling grass fields.
Next time I'll bring a horse, he thought, annoyed. He'd been so distracted these past few days. It wasn't normal for him. He didn't like the way it made him feel.
The way he acted during Ariwin's training was the first hint something wasn't right. Yet he brushed those thoughts aside. No point in fretting over past actions. Instead, he needed to focus on preventing further lack of concentration. At dusk, Duvenwog's castle appeared in the distance. It was a welcome sight. The clamor of citizens ending their days and returning to their homes filled the air. Children laughed while ignoring their parents' commands.
The ignorant bliss of youth,
Angarahim thought bitterly. As he approached the castle, he crossed an open field while lost in his thoughts, when he caught the sound of faint footsteps matching his pace from behind.
I heard rumors of a traveler who lost a fight matching your description, and I had to see for myself.
Angarahim spun to face Clivage, who wore a smug expression.
What do you want? Angarahim snapped.
Clivage covered his own eye with his hand mockingly.
So it's true. Who gave it to you?
Not your concern. What did I tell you about your spies following me? Clivage moved closer.
Why don't you remind me?
He stuck out his chin.
You know it's frowned upon to strike a lord, even if done by the favored pet of the Fezlons.
Angarahim laughed. You're not as clever or intimidating as you believe. They'd laud me a hero for finally giving you the discipline your parents never did. Clivage's entire body shook as he grabbed the dagger on his hip and stepped within inches of Angarahim's face, sneering.
Don't you ever disparage my parents' memory.
Just what do you think you'll accomplish with that dagger?
I'll break your hand before you get it free,
Angarahim said. Clivage huffed, withdrew his hand, and stepped back.
If I find your spies following me again, a broken hand will be the least of your concern.
Clivage stomped away.
One of these days,
Angarahim muttered inwardly. Angarahim entered the castle from the side entrance again. The fewer people he encountered, the better. The faint scent of enchanted forest emanated from Ariwin's room as Angarahim walked down the hallway.
Should I explain my behavior from yesterday morning?
He wondered to himself.
Not in this condition. He shook his head.
Fragments of sunlight lit his room, making it so he would not need a candle until he returned. He gathered a set of clean clothing and made his way to the bathing chambers. The chambers were empty, and the water in the tub remained cold. He had no reason to heat it, and after a quick wash, he returned to his room. Inside, he almost stepped on a folded piece of parchment. There was no name, but the handwriting was Arwen's. He read the note. Our tavern at nightfall. She must have heard me arrive. Sleep will have to wait, he thought unbothered. Seeing as nightfall was near, he made his way into the city. The tavern was mostly empty as Angarahine arrived. Laxia, Nern's daughter, stood behind the bar and gave an excited wave and smile as he entered, then rushed towards him and gave him a hug.
I wasn't sure you were coming tonight.
She looked at his eye and squinted.
Loreg finally get some offense in?
She asked with a hint of amusement.
I wasn't watching where I was walking, he said with a shrug. Before or after a few drinks? She laughed. Arwen's at your table already. The usual?
Before he responded in agreement, she clapped him on the back and returned to the bar. Arwen sat at the back table facing him. A smile filled her face, but quickly disappeared as he drew closer and she stood.
What happened to your eye?
She asked, gently touching the swollen area.
Does it hurt?
Not as much as before. He gently grabbed her hand, lowered, and released it. I walked into a low tree branch. I was distracted.
Yeah, you did seem rather distracted yesterday. That's not like you.
Before he responded, the tavern door swung open.
Angie!
Loreg yelled while running over and grabbing Angarahine from behind. As Angarahine turned, Loreg let go.
What did you do to him, Ari?
That's what he gets for talking to Laxia first.
She shrugged her shoulders.
I won't make that mistake again,
Angarahine said playfully, sitting next to Arwen. Loreg sat across from them, leaning back.
Why the note?
Laxia brought three mugs of beer, followed by a server with bowls of soup for the table.
Thank you,
Arwen said to the two women, then turned to Angarahine.
I wanted to make sure you celebrated tonight. I know you can't resist a vague message.
Celebrate what? Something regarding the Kuvayan visitors? Angarahine shoved the soup into his mouth. The warm liquid soothed his empty stomach. This was the first he'd eaten since yesterday afternoon.
We'll talk about Kuvayan later,
she said, then paused with a twinkle of mischief in her eyes.
You don't know?
I don't know what, he said with a chuckle. Loreg and Arwen both looked at him with dumbfounded expressions.
He doesn't know?
Loreg asked, surprised.
How do you not know? Arwen retorted.
Maybe you punched him too hard, Ari.
Loreg snickered.
I didn't really punch him.
Arwen threw her hands in the air and laughed.
Still no idea what you two are on about,
Angarahine said, then took a long swig of beer, enjoying the moment. The weight of the day's events quickly dissipating. Arwen grabbed the side of his head and pressed her soft lips into his cheek. His mug lingered in the air. He couldn't move. Never had she done anything like that before.
Happy birthday, Angarahine,
she said, releasing him. Arwen's emerald green eyes brimmed with happiness, slicing through his rebuilt defenses as he faced her.
Was there something more to that birthday kiss?
Angarahine wondered. A moment passed.
I somehow forgot, he said seriously.
No worries. We remembered for you,
Loreg said as he raised his mug.
Tonight's a night you'll never forget. Or remember. Another round,
Loreg shouted. I'll always remember tonight, Angarahine thought, still feeling Arwen's kiss on his cheek. Laxia kept the beer flowing, making sure their mugs were never empty. They eventually discussed the Kuvayan visitors. A tinge of sadness struck Angarahine as Arwen mentioned she'd be attending the unification meetings, but his sadness quickly dissipated as the topic changed. Their joyful conversation lasted well into the night, when suddenly an immense flash of bright red light, seemingly coming from everywhere, filled the tavern, followed immediately by a bone-rattling thunderclap. Then an eerie hush fell over the room, broken quickly by Laxia falling to her knees, shattering mugs that she had held in her hands. Arwen was the first to her feet, followed quickly by Angarahine, swaying suddenly as the beer rushed to his head. Tears streamed down Laxia's face.
It's okay. It's just a little beer and some mugs,
Arwen said, unsure of her own words. Laxia looked at Arwen, then to Angarahin, her eyes filled with terror.
The light of the Razashin marks their return, Laxia said,
then fainted.